On the website, and there it is. We now have more free time, right? Video conferencing and business, cancel that out of town trip to a client, click on you're talking to him. More time for your kids, isn't that right? They used to ride the rails to visit the family, or use propeller-driven aircraft. Now hop on a jet, countless hours are saved. More time to relax, more time to be with family. But let me wake up from that dream, huh? These days we scurry about more than ever, not only because we're stuck on the 405, but because our agendas keep us hustling from one project to another, on the run to satisfy everything from our social life to business responsibilities, you name it. The list is very long. Who of us doesn't wear a watch? All day. We check it a dozen times or more every day to conform to the demands of our schedule. It becomes so routine, we hardly give it any thought. I mean, who of us doesn't have a cell phone on hand? Waiting until we get home to pick up the messages, that would drag our schedule into oblivion. But let's not blame the latest technology for our rush days. It's also our public image, our personal reputation. They play such a large role in our decision to dash through every hectic day. The use of our time is determined by nothing less than the priorities that we set for ourselves. And we don't need the Al-Khayt on Yom Kippur to admit it. I grant you a concession, of course. Sometimes it's beyond our control. A very difficult business situation, a need for a doctor's appointment, things like that, they're beyond our ability to dispense with that. But we better accept the notion that we organize our time in accordance with what we consider our most important priorities. Ever since my teens, a slogan has been reverberating through my mind. Whatever I'll gain in life, I'll pay a price for it. Young couples look forward to the miracle of that beautiful first baby. By the way, we have an important announcement to you later. But then, they have to stay up all night, you know, where there's a rash on the tushy, huh? Stay up all night to keep that baby happy. It's a price to pay. Obviously, the only question that needs to be answered, is the price worth it? Business demands create absentee fathers. Social pressures distract mothers. Latchkey children become the silent sufferers because of our need for prestige, for status, for a more bulging bank account that somehow took precedence, kept us so much from our homes. Sometimes even spouses are abandoned all too long and all too often by their loving mates, because somehow the pressures that surround them leave them no choice. It's a price that we pay for our priorities, whether at the moment they be proper or misguided. But my friends, don't worry. Ours is not the first generation to realize that our children, our relationships require much more time than we've allotted to them. This is often the case. Problems somehow appear ready in the Torah, and we learn. I don't think it's a worthy distinction, but Isaac is recorded as being too busy to notice his children. The Holy Patriarch of ours pays a heavy, heavy price for his public commitment, however laudable those commitments are. Please understand, Isaac overcame many an obstacle, In a way, he's a hero. He got over the trauma of a near-death experience orchestrated by his father, by Abraham. And yet we read that he's able to dig his father's wells. It's certainly an apt metaphor for his willingness to father in his father's spiritual footsteps. But did Isaac learn sufficiently from that dramatic experience? Did he learn to see his own children in a different light? In a way, it reminds me of what Theodor Herzl wrote in his book, The Judenstaat. He hoped to inspire the next generation to do better than his. The good father, he wrote, the good father enables his son to see the future better by hoisting him on his own shoulders. My friends, at the end of his life, Isaac became blind, perhaps the outward sign of his inability to see his children's needs. Am I too cynical to suggest that it was not the lack of an ophthalmologist that made Isaac blind? It was his lack of attention to his own twin sons, to the extent that when Jacob did come in to see him for a blessing, Isaac didn't know whether it was Jacob or Esau. Family dissension is openly discussed in the Torah. We Jews, we place no halos on the heads of our patriarchs or matriarchs. Rebecca was a good woman, of course. But as a mother, to favor one son over the other, that posture alone encouraged her to create the ruse for Jacob to try to fool her husband, his father. I said her husband, I didn't say her loving husband. Can a wife love her husband and still manipulate one of her children to fool him? And if we need to play the game of point-counterpoint, even if we laud Isaac every time we recite the Amidah by naming him along with Abraham and Jacob as a model, can we justify his insistence on favoring one of his own sons over the other? And my friends, I'm not changing the subject when I refer to the huge national election we had less than 2 weeks ago. Now, if you think I want to talk politics, you're right, but not the politics in your mind. You see, as far as you and I are concerned, the elections are not over. I may be playing with words, but just as did Isaac and Rebecca, you and I have to make choices, hard choices, painful choices, knowing well that a vote one way or the other will bring with it some imperfections. But for us Jews, that's not at all a new concept. It is what theologians call the election of Israel. Every time we have the honor of an aliyah for the Torah, every time we raise that Kiddush cup and chant the Kiddush, we say of God, Asher bachar banu mikol ha'amim. Yes, God has elected us, Asher bachar banu. In Israel, elections are bechirot, from bachar. Asher bachar banu. Yes, God has elected us from among all the nations. That ultimate election took place at Mount Sinai. It didn't provide us with many visible advantages. Only the burden of working for Tikkun Olam, only the weight of raising noble, well-educated families. That Albert Einstein exhibit at the Skirball Cultural Center reminds me of the posture that Albert Einstein took of his Jewish identity. He said, "The only thing I regret about being born a Jew is that I did not have the opportunity to elect to be one." We weren't simply born Jewish. God nominated us, if you will. And we're still running for election. And the election is far from over. Each day we wake up, we elect. Stay longer in the office or come home to loved ones. Accept the extra social obligation for the sake of status, or spend a little time, a little more time with children or grandchildren. Maybe it's not as bad as the Midrash in Tachuma implies when it comments on part of this morning's text. When Esau finally does show up, you know, with a meal that his father requested, and he identifies himself as Isaac's firstborn. We're told, "Ve'achared Yitzchak charada gdola ad me'od," and Isaac trembled exceedingly. Other than Isaac having asked Esau for food, this is the very first recorded conversation between father and son. Now we know why the Midrash justifies Isaac's violent trembling. It says, when Esau entered Gehinnom, meaning hell, Gehinnom opened to him. We venerate Isaac as one of our forefathers. But I don't know, seeing him as a father instead of a forefather is like comparing day and night. Esau was already an adult when that first conversation took place between son and dad. Midrash is right, that's Gehinnom, that's hell. For a father and son not to have a meaningful dialogue. So my friends, let's raise the Kiddush cup. And let's say Asher Baharbanu with conviction. Stand before the Torah and chant Asher Baharbanu, knowing that as did God, we too must make choices. The election isn't over, not by far. Unfortunately, you and I can vote every single day. No, we must get out the vote. We must vote every day, just like we did 2 weeks ago. What we elect to do personally regarding the tough choices we confront, that will make the difference for generations to come. And if I may say, that is a proposition for which we have to cast a unanimous vote. And so, I ask now our president. Yes, Bryna Rosenthal, to please share with us some wonderful announcements that she has.
Thank you, Rabbi Dershowitz. Oh, it's nice to say that, Rabbi Dershowitz. Welcome to the Bima.